There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey, I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg, and this is Side Note,
a podcast where every episode we tell stories about and then debate a controversial topic.
And then we research and splice in all the mind-blowing shiznit throughout so you are entertained while simultaneously learning.
Today we are talking about the Oscars. We are going to start by giving our opinions on the Best Picture nominees, some we loved and some we truly hated. Then we are going to get into a debate. Are the Oscars a culturally relevant spectacle, or should they just be canceled altogether? Today's Side Notes will be presented by me, Craig, and Rachel.
Hey peeps, let's get into it.
Charlie Puth, we're in the booth.
Oh, Charlie Puth. When you showed me that album, I was like into some of it, but not. I don't like telling people
how much I like Charlie Puth. It's fully embarrassing. He's mayonnaise, but a person.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
I just don't think he has very much spice. Why do people use mayonnaise as like boring? Is it just because it's boring?
It's just like a creamy sauce with no spice.
But eggs, and eggs are not boring. One bit, girl.
But I think white people like them, and white people are boring. Like, I love mayonnaise.
Why are white people boring?
Oh my god. Well, let's go through history. Okay. Well, you see, it's just the concept of anything exciting or spicy being foreign.
This is going to tie into our Oscars today. But how are you feeling today?
I'm feeling good. How are you?
I am yet again sick. What a coincidence.
On brand.
On brand. I'm getting through it, though. I have a bit of a sore throat. But
AKA you took Advil.
So I'm going to try not to cough too much into the mic today. But
Today's episode is sponsored by Advil, keeping us going through every situation. That's not true. But if you're, for some reason, working at Advil and you want to sponsor this, go for it.
What did we learn this week?
This week, I learned something related to the Oscars, which is related to this podcast.
Wow, good job.
But it was kind of a coincidence. I don't know if I just saw it come up because it's Oscar season. It's actually about someone you love.
Oh, okay.
Kate Winslet.
I thought you meant I don't think I would have said Kate Winslet. She was my love, like 5 years ago.
I'm hoping you don't know this fact. It was circulating the internet recently.
Wait, about Kate Winslet?
Yeah, she's like a hot topic.
She's been nominated for many an Oscar.
And did not win many an Oscar.
She won one for The Reader, I think.
Exactly. That's what I'm going to get into.
What?
Wasn't it called The Reader? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Great book.
So, Kate Winslet, what do you think she did with that Oscar?
I think she put it above her mantle, above her fireplace, and every night before bed when she sips her tea, she thinks, oh, wow, I'm quite professional and I don't know.
It's not a bad guess, but Kate Winslet has explained that she keeps her Oscar in her bathroom so that when guests come over, they can give acceptance speeches in the mirror and not feel embarrassed.
Wow, that's
isn't
so
that funny.
Fun.
Like, so you can like go to Kate Winslet, and she says she always kind of knows when someone did it because they take a little longer after you hear the toilet flush, and then they come out with like rosy cheeks.
Does she have like antibacterial soap or things to
write
down?
Like a lot of comments were like that.
It's not sanitary.
Like, you hope they're respectful and wash their hands
before they use it.
But an interesting tidbit about that Oscar that she won was she was in an episode of... So she famously didn't win a bunch. Like, she was nominated many times.
She didn't win for Titanic. And I mean, she was so good at being Frozen and
amazing
so
at
good
Frozen.
At saying,
yeah.
Speak like a man.
But basically, she was in an episode of Extras once talking about how she doesn't like there's Oscar bait Holocaust films, like they're often created to win the Oscars. And then ironically, later, she won her Oscar for being in a Holocaust film.
The Reader, yeah. Okay, weird thing to say, in my opinion, just to start Kate Winslet.
Oh, for her,
yeah. Just like, what are you talking about?
The other thing is I actually never watched Extras and I'm like, what? Is that like, is it fully scripted? Is it?
It's supposed to, like, I think you play yourself in.
Right. Like, is she talking about something maybe she actually does believe, or was, or did someone just say this?
Okay. But still, I'm also just like, weird opinion. Whenever I think about these like legacy actors, I'm like, are they problematic? Like, are you going to say something?
No, I mean, I think people agree, like, there's a lot of actually amazing Holocaust films, but I, to a certain degree, any great tragedy, often when it's being exploited for a film, is sometimes like, you know, it's going to be in that category of like,
we'll
this
get into this
the
in
Oscar.
The debate. We'll get into this. Okay, so mine's also about the Oscars, my What Did I Learn This Week? And it's about the statistics and the science of winning that Oscar pool. Have you ever done an Oscar pool where you vote? I love how I ask you questions like, we haven't been dating for 10 years. Like, totally. We've done Oscar pools.
We've been dating for 12 years.
Oh, wow.
First of all, I have. Never, I've done one, you're right. I've only ever done it because you at home would like print them out and give them to everyone.
And you're always like, makeup. You're like, yeah, Cindy. And you always lose, and it's like always the same.
And even like foreign films, I'm like, I have not seen any of these, but I wish and I should have.
Wow, open your mind, Mitch.
No,
go
I
see
mean,
some foreign
what
films.
What usually happens
Mitch.
Is I watch them, and then they're the best films. Of
yeah,
all the Oscars.
Like all the Oscars.
But I often, or like short animated films and stuff, like
yeah,
I've never seen them,
watch
you just
those.
Guess.
So the statistics of guessing the Oscars right is like what I was learning.
If you're
about
pure guessing, you mean?
Yeah, well, based again, or, this is based on statistics.
Okay.
So this is from 2014. It's a little bit dated. And so what happens
statistics
is that,
have changed so much.
Well,
since
I don't know. I don't know. The director of the so who's going to win Best Director? You should look at the Directors Guild of America because there's an 80% chance that it will be the same director to win the Oscar. So this
wait, what is that? Directors Guild America? What
it's a separate award show.
Okay.
So if you look to that, there's an 80% chance that that's who will win Best Director.
Okay. Wow.
So this year,
oh
Alfonso
gosh,
Cuarón for Roma.
Advice. Like people can win money with this advice.
Yeah.
I didn't realize what you were doing. Okay. Okay.
Oh, keep didn't going. I not explain that? I feel like
well,
sometimes I
thought
like,
you just meant like if you fully randomly guess statistically, your chances of winning are blah.
He's like, oh, there's a 1 in 5 chance if there's 5
yeah, I was
movies.
Like, this is gonna be boring, but okay.
No.
Okay. No. You're
always
here.
Shade
I'm
my
here.
Ideas.
No, it's a great idea. You're gonna help people win. What else can we learn?
Okay, so the Golden Globe winner is usually a 50% chance of winning Best Picture. So it's obviously good to go to the Golden Globe winners. That one's a little bit obvious. Okay. Male winners, on average, are 42 years old. Female winners, 33. So when you look at the ages of the nominees.
Interesting. This is actually part a debate point you just stole from me about why the Oscars are shitty.
Okay, I love the Oscars, which doesn't. We'll get to that later. An Australian study, this is sort of separate, found that people talk about the Oscar bump. Like, when you get nominated for an Oscar, it means that more people will see the movie. They found that that's, like, actually fully not true.
Interesting. Another one of my debate points really
oh
helping
my God.
Me here.
Okay, wow. Okay, anyways, these are just what I learned this week, the statistics.
Well, how does that
Oscars.
Help you pick?
No, this is a separate thing. This
okay,
is just,
stop
like,
stealing my
okay,
points.
Okay,
really.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, I need more stats on, like, how do I pick the winner?
Story time.
All right, so time to talk about the Oscars.
Ooh, I love the Oscars.
We will have
that's
a debate
okay, I
in
love
a minute,
the Oscars.
But today's going to be a little bit different because instead of just specific stories, we actually thought we would go through the top 2019 nominations for Best Picture. Is that what it's called? Best
Yeah, we
movie.
Watched them. We have opinions.
We watched almost all of them, and we have very, very strong opinions on some of these.
Okay.
Some are different,
yes,
some are the same.
Some of these movies were trash. Okay, so
yeah,
let's go in order of us how we actually saw them, because as a couple, we saw most of them together.
That's true.
So the first one we would have saw was the blockbuster Black Panther, nominated right. for Best Picture, directed by Ryan Coogler, who I love. So I personally, again, as I just said, love Ryan Coogler, the director. He made this movie called Fruitvale Station, which is so
I
good.
I still haven't seen that.
I've been wanting you to watch it. It's on Netflix. It literally takes place over
so
a day.
That's so bad that I haven't seen that.
Why?
It's like so easy for me to watch that.
No, I know. When everything's on I'm always like, it's on Netflix, like, you're lazy. Such a great movie. He also made Creed, which I watched like with my friend once because he wanted to watch it. I'm like, ugh, eye roll, this is going to be so dumb. Never seen Rocky. Okay, yeah. Okay, come for me, straights. I've never seen Rocky. I obviously don't know anything about movies. I've never seen Rocket.
but you loved it, didn't you?
I loved Creed and the fight scenes.
You should
scenes.
Go back and watch all the Rockies.
But okay,
be like
the
truly
reason.
Inspired.
Yeah, but I don't know if I would love Rocky. I just based on like the trailer, I don't know if I'd love Rocky. But the reason I loved Rocky was this, like, the way the fight scenes were insane. They never cut, and he uses this cinematographer named Maurice Alberti and Rachel Morrison, both female cinematographers. For Creed, for Fruitvale Station, he has these like crazy scenes where he never cuts, which I loved.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that bothered me about Black Panther is I didn't find they used that
enough. He didn't use that technique, which is like really effective that he's used in the past.
Yeah, they used it in that first fight scene in Black Panther when they're in the bar kind of thing. Like,
I forget. It was so long ago I watched this.
Oh, like, it's like one of the first main fight scenes when there's like the like evil white guy there with like the money and like she has the like spear and it's like so effective. And I was like, this is going to be the best movie ever. But I found as it went on, they kind of lost that like magical, like not cutting cinematography momentum, and all the fight scenes, in my opinion, became just like normal. Did you just burn?
I don't know. Something weird happened in my throat. I'm sorry.
Anyway, so I liked Black Panther. I didn't love Black
Panther. Yeah, I would say, like, the same thing kind of happens to me every time I go into a Marvel film that's been hyped.
Yeah, that's true.
What it is like, you see, oh my God, this movie has 95% on Rotten Tomatoes, and your mind goes, whoa, this is so exciting. Like, to combine an amazing action, huge blockbuster with the potential for a great story and, like, feeling captivated by characters is really exciting to me. And then almost every single time I go in to any of these Marvel films, the same thing happens where I go, that was really fun, but, like, that wasn't that good of a movie.
Like, the superhero tropes take over sometimes.
Yeah, and you can tell that even these amazing directors are kind of, like, forced to go into that box because it's a huge risk. They spend so much money.
Yeah.
Like, the producers or whoever's funding it is like, you actually have to listen to us.
Actually, Black Panther is so good when you think about it from the perspective of a Marvel movie.
It did, but in some ways it still had those tropes.
Yeah.
And I think because my expectations were so high, like, I think going out of it, I really enjoyed it. I had fun. It stood out to me.
And Black Excellence to the max.
Yeah, and it stood out from other Marvel films for me. But at the end of the day, and like a year later or however long it's been now, I can say it was overhyped to that degree where it's like there are other films on this list that to me I was like, whoa, I have not seen movies like this and it's done something amazing to me emotionally.
And also, like, literally, we're not black. Like, if you think about that type of movie being made from like a queer perspective.
Yeah, if it was all
like
gay
literally just like
an
unapologetically queer action movie, you would just be like, okay, this is it actually is incredible from the actual thought and like idea behind it being made.
I thought
and
it
that
was
it made the most
sense.
Effing money. Like that like gets me so excited. And the music was incredible, like Kendrick Lamar's like.
Yeah, sorry, I don't mean
so
to disparage
good.
It in any way.
No, but it's the same
it's
thing
still
that happens
a category
every
of
every superhero movie. I'm always like, oh God. Like I just don't like these types of movies. Like Fruitvale Station was it was like experimental. It took place over one day. Like those types of interesting things when they work, I'm like, that's cool, but it's like you're right. Millions of dollars at stake. They have to do certain things. Anyways, it was better. Black Panther was a lot better than a lot of these other movies in this category.
Yeah,
including our next
one.
Speaking of like queer canon, it's like I really thought I was gonna love this, but I'm like, this movie sucks. A Star Is Born.
Okay, no, don't say this movie sucks.
What?
Do you actually think it sucks?
Okay,
maybe I agree.
Kind of like, it's the hype thing. Like, everyone at TIFF's like, oh my God, this masterpiece. And I'd never seen the original one, so I didn't know it had to like follow this plot that's ridiculous. But okay, I don't know. Is suck a strong word?
No, it's not. I think that the first, and we've kind of talked about this, like the first 20, 30 minutes, I was like, I'm into this.
Okay, like, I was stoned, so I'm like, was it because I was stoned?
No, but I was not.
Stoned.
And okay. I was like, okay, I'm feeling that like Willem and Shangela are in this. I'm loving the drag scene. Right? They were both in it, right?
Yeah. Mitch,
you scared
cool.
me. You, no, you gave me a look.
Oh
like,
my God.
You were like, and I was like, did I just say the wrong drag queen's name?
No, okay. I just have a
love
resting
that.
Dumb face.
I was like, okay, I get instantly that it's still a Hollywood film. It's going to be a little bit cheesy.
And
but
it was like the Italian family, like Lady Gaga was being
funny.
It was
and
like good.
I was like, already
energy.
The music, I'm kind of into it. It's not, the music's not overly cheesy. Leading up to the main song of the film. Like,
oh,
what's
Shallow
it
was great. Turn it off.
I was like.
Turn it off after Shallow.
Shivers
yeah,
into
great.
This. But then it just becomes the most boring movie I've ever
and
seen.
And there's 2 extra hours.
Yeah,
and
I'm
you're
like,
what?
That you already hit the climax, and now I have to watch for another 2 hours.
And it was so serious. It's like, this is actually hilarious. When Alec Baldwin says, ladies and gentlemen, Ali, I'm like, that's comedic genius, but I know
yes.
you're actually being serious.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My biggest issues with A Star Is Born. One, what genre of music is the man supposed to represent that is so popular
and so artistically like
artistic and smart. It's like it's like
credible.
Bad,
yeah,
bad
versus
alternative
she's
rock.
Pitched as like, oh, the pop is just awful.
It's like they were making fun of pop music. I'm like, this pop music is way higher brow than whatever like hell on a
yeah, agreed.
And whatever music he was making, he walks into a gay bar and they're all like, oh my God, it's that famous guy.
I was like, how'd this crossover happen?
Yeah, it's like he looked like okay, to me it sounds like Kings of Leon or something. It's like if the lead singer of Kings of Leon on walking to a gay bar, no one would bat an eyelash. They would just be like, oh, there's an alternative gay guy here. Yeah. Like they, but they were all like, whoa, it's him. So that was just unrealistic and dumb to me. The whole moral around the music of it, it's supposed to be about a movie about music. I'm like, this makes no sense.
And it was kind of bizarre in the sense that Lady Gaga represents that, and she's always kind of been like, pop is highbrow. I'm going to make pop highbrow. And I know this is a movie and she's playing a character, but it, someone mentioned once that it would have been more interesting if they actually made her music. Like, why did it have to be bad?
Yeah, like, why did you do that,
And I mean, like, catchy song. But I mean, like, in the eyes of the people in the movie, they were all like, this music's bad. But it's like, then why? It would be interesting if it was like, no, she's actually making amazing music and he's having a hard time dealing with her fame.
And exactly. And also, okay, wow. This is how I know it's a bad movie, because I'm like, I can just keep talking. And remember when at the end, it's like the manager comes between them as if they have this amazing relationship.
Strongest
and
relationship.
And they're like, so like, okay, yeah, wow, he has daddy issues, I guess, and like she, like, I don't know, like they like try and build them up a little bit, but they're communicating, they're in love,
and they never really have a problem in,
like,
their relationship.
There's no issue. It's like, why would this manager's like one sentence cause you to literally, spoiler alert, but whatever, you don't need to, like, kill yourself? It's like, no, talk, have a conversation, because you're clearly in love and you clearly talk all the time.
And they also, they pulled the trick of like using the dog. Remember?
Oh, yeah. Like what's when that called? Dog tragedy porn?
I don't know. It's like, yeah, the dog was so... That actually is what made me feel emotional. I was like, you cheated and you used a dog being sad about its owner dying.
Also, like, Bradley Cooper, you're so effing creepy to, like, what? Direct a movie where you're, like, ripped and hot, like, and have no problems and, like, are a flawless person.
That's true.
That
his only problem was his, like,
alcohol. Are a martyr for your
whatever.
Wife and then, like, die. Yeah. And also, alcoholics don't have ripped bodies like that. Then put just, like, tan... Anyway, so bad.
Fair.
But
I think that overall... we obviously, like, have some feelings. I feel that people want to,
as
like,
a gay man, I was betrayed.
Because I was proud of Lady Gaga. I'm like, for somebody, it's her first debut acting role. Not that I think she necessarily deserved Best Actress, but I was like,
and get
good,
some
good
humbleness. Now she's just like, is that
there
she
can
goes,
be
I'm crying.
100 people in a room.
But she's always crying, and she's like, oh my God, I want to come to God. It's like, stop crying. Like, relax. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, you're overreacting. If you just watch this movie again, you might be like, oh, wait, it's really not that interesting.
Right.
But I will say, it's a divided the nation, because when
divided
I watched
the gay
this,
nation.
Well, no, this, oh yeah, this person is gay, but is a lesbian. But when I was sitting next to one of my best friends the end of this movie, when Lady Gaga's single tear falls down her cheek as she sings a Whitney Houston song, whatever. I started laughing. My friend beside me uncontrollably sobbing her eyes out. I'm like, I'm dead inside. I literally laughed out loud. And my other friend, because every gay person in Toronto was there opening night on a Tuesday, was like, I heard you laugh, like, at like the most, like, awful time. But I was like, there's nothing but humor that I can find in this moment, because it's so,
like, over the top.
Over
and
the
just
top.
Like contrived.
Contrived. Okay, wow.
Okay,
moving on.
Very strong feelings came out about A Star
Is Born.
Surprised
I had to even talk about that movie. Next, we have what we saw.
I'm going to quickly mention that there are two we did not see.
Okay, yeah, well, why are we talking about that?
I just want to say, so you know, we're not going to look at Green Book and Vice because we didn't see
thank
those
you.
Ones.
So I've heard just so many bad things. And after seeing Bohemian Rhapsody, which we'll get to later, which everyone had said bad things about, I'm like, I can't watch these movies that everyone said bad things about. Green Book sounds so,
so which
bad.
One was the next one that we watched?
Roma.
Roma. Roma.
So now we will change the tone for this masterpiece.
Roma was amazing.
Amazing. Okay, so my favorite director is Alfonso Cuarón, who directed this movie. So I went in, like with Black Panther and A Star Is Born, with very high expectations. So I want to, like, preface
but
that.
But did we know what kind of reviews they were getting before?
I did. It was the same thing out of Toronto.
Like, people saying, like,
everyone saying it's so
it's
good.
Beautiful.
The same thing as A Star Is
also,
Born.
Also, loved that we watched it on Netflix.
Yeah, I didn't see it, even though people say because of, like, the shots it's worth seeing in theaters. I
would have been happy
to
see it in theaters,
it
but
effective.
I also was like, that's cool. I'm into this idea of, like, relaunching a film.
Okay. So, Alfonso Cuarón, back to, like, not cutting and just, like, designing scenes. Like, he also uses a cinematographer that he's famous for who doesn't cut. And I'm like, this is the most effective. I don't know anything about, like, filming, whatever, like, cinematography. But it works. Like,
it does.
In Children of Men, the best action movie of all time, he has a scene where he doesn't cut. And I tell people about this
multiple
all the time.
Multiple scenes, actually.
Or, sorry, but the final battle scene or action scene is... I don't know. It's the most unbelievable thing I've seen. And he uses that in this movie. A very emotional, you know, serious. There's no action in this movie, but it gives that same effect.
And it gives you the appreciation of, like, they're actually acting all in this moment and coordinating. It's like a dance with the cameras and the actors. And I find that fascinating because then it's more like a play. And I feel like it gives the actors a chance to have an entire scene.
And be in it.
Instead of like, here, let's just record these couple of lines only facing on you. It's like, no, everyone's involved. The whole crew, the whole cast, go.
Ah, the long take. Everybody loves it. My recent fave long take scenes are one in Homecoming where Julia Roberts, in the first episode, walks across the Homecoming premises with no cuts. It's beautiful. One of the ones that really stick out for me in Children of Men is when they are driving in a car with Julianne Moore and Clive Owen and some others, and all the enemies start running down from the woods. Then a motorcycle crashes into them, and it's sort of the whole time you're thinking, like, how did they do this? Filmmakers and cinephiles alike consider the tracking shot, aka a long take without cutting, to be something worth admiring. It obviously takes technical brilliance, teamwork, and coordination, and a lot of planning to pull these scenes off. Other iconic examples are from films like Touch of Evil and Goodfellas, and show how these long takes can respectively highlight tension or explore the themes of the film. Another amazing take that highlights the theme of a film is from the recent movie Widows, where Colin Farrell, a politician, leaves an opponent's campaign headquarters, which is in a lower income neighborhood, and drives to his own mansion and house in this rich neighborhood. And it sort of specifically highlights how close affluence and poverty can reside to each other in major cities. And action films also love these scenes as they can capture the realism of the fight. For example, Old Boy and The Protector, Atomic Blonde, and even the Daredevil show on Netflix all have extended action and fighting scenes that use the long take to great effect. Here at Side Note, we want to know, what are your favorite long takes? What are your favorite tracking shots? Which ones have made you sort of think after the movie, like, that specific scene was amazing? Let us know using the hashtag SideNotePodcast, and also look at other people's. You might get inspired to watch a new film.
Okay, it was just the most beautiful story. It was so moving. And I remember a lot of people talk about, oh, it's black and white. Like, we even said, are we in the mood for this?
Oh, that was a red flag for me, yeah.
But like, you think, it's foreign, it's like going to have subtitles, and people think it's going to be boring. But remember, 5 minutes in, we just looked at each other, and we're like, oh, like, I'm so
into
this.
How does the movie... It's amazing. So contrasting like a Marvel film, we can use Black Panther as an example here, but just any Marvel film in general, like often what I find lacking is that true character connection. But then you see a movie like Roma and you're like, how come in 5 minutes I can be so connected to these characters, but after an entire 2 hours of a Marvel film...
Black Panther, I thought, actually did an amazing job of you caring in a Marvel film.
I guess I more just
film.
Mean like, I've always thought... I'm always wondering why, like, sci-fi specifically has a hard... Sci-fi, to me, like, struggles with character connection because it's so conceptually based.
Yeah.
And then I wondered if that bleeds into, like, action and Marvel
films as well.
Children
of Men was sci-fi.
That's true. But I'm picturing, yeah, like, space... Like, a lot of space movies that I love, I don't love for their character development. I love because
the concept.
The visuals and that sort of thing. But then you see a movie like this and you're like, why can't a Marvel film or why can't a sci-fi film take 5 minutes to build a character that this... film was able to do by just being simple, showing us the intricacies of their life that's nuanced. It's not, I can never remember this word, but it's not like when you literally just say, like, instead of
show,
showing
don't
us,
tell.
Yeah.
Instead that's what of, supposed to do is show, don't tell, yeah. But some movies tell, don't show. Like, for Bohemian Rhapsody, the worst movie.
So, yeah, Roma, like, and it's like a simple story. It's not overly complex, but it's very interesting.
And so, like, it's about the director's, as a kid, relationship with the person who helped look after his family in Mexico City. Like, it's obviously, like, a tale of love for this person who is so endearing in the movie and such a brilliant actress who'd never acted before.
Yeah. That blows my mind, like, when people are in films and then they're like, they found them on the street. They had never acted before.
It makes me feel a little bit like, okay, like when people are like, I like won this Oscar. I'm like, okay, like I guess anyone could do that. Like, I know that's so rude, but I'm like, everyone's so obsessed with acting. I'm like, it's not that hard. Like, there's harder things to do. Like,
I
don't know, like physics. Anyways, but she's the most amazing actress in this movie. So is the mom. What I think is so important is that in other movies, they would have treated the mom character as like mean or like rude and like that would be the tension. But no, when this like... caretaker comes to her in times of need, the mom is like vulnerable and open, and they work together to help each other, like fight off like essentially like patriarchal issues in their lives, like men.
And it's just like, so layered.
So smart, yeah.
It's like she can be good and bad at the same time. Every character can do things where you think they're going to be
nuance.
Set up as the bad person. But then you're like, wait, no.
No, that's not
you're
life.
A human being.
Like, you're a human being.
And I think that's why a film like this can be so incredible, because it's based on Alfonso Cuarón's like life growing up, right? I think it's like a personal experience to him. He saw the nuance in the characters before he created this, and I feel like then the actresses and actors understand that. And there's so much more realness
and
to it.
And it's not boring. There's so much thing happened. Like, you're learning about the history of Mexico. The final scene is like a literal climax. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just the most brilliant movie, and when you put it beside something like A Star Is Born, or more importantly, like the other worst movies in my opinion, like Bohemian Rhapsody, it's like, I honestly am like offended that Bohemian Rhapsody has to sit beside this movie that was so thoughtful and like, anyways, Alfonso Cuarón's a genius. Watch E2. I said this recently to someone, I was like, watch E2 Mamba Tambien. I'm like, there's nothing more pretentious than being like, oh, have you seen E2 Mamba Tambien?
No, but that's a really good movie.
Yeah, E2 Mamba Tambien, so good. Oh my God, hot, sexy, also like a metaphor for like Mexico's, like it's about politics. It's so much more than that. Watch Children of Men, watch the third Harry
Potter
that he directed.
And isn't it about like masculinity?
Yeah, it's about masculinity and about like a political turmoil. It's like, yeah, he obviously is a man who's able to look at himself
with
vulnerability.
Yeah, be introspective, talk about societal issues that are greater than one individual, but represent them through individuals. I think that's really cool.
Oh my God. Okay.
I think because you've mentioned it so much, we should just quickly talk about
Bohemian
Rhapsody.
Oh, my God.
Okay, you obviously already know our feelings
because we watched it last night. I can't talk.
So we stopped it an hour and a half in.
No, not an hour. Oh, an hour and a half in. There was like an hour left.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair to say. People might get mad about that because apparently the Live Aid concert at the end is so fun to watch, but they even got that wrong.
What happened to me is I thought watching it, and this is exactly what we did, I was like, I would way rather just watch actual clips of Freddie Mercury in interviews and performing right now.
Yeah,
because that's effectively what this movie is. There's no real cohesive story. Not to mention, I looked it up and half of the things in the movie are not even accurate portrayals of what happened, which is frustrating to a lot of people. But I was just like, it all felt so disjointed. I was like,
I thought we downloaded the wrong version. I was like, okay, we downloaded this movie. Don't come for us, Canadian government.
That reminds me of
like
one time off topic. We were watching, you were like, there's this clip of like Aladdin the musical on YouTube, and we started watching it. And we were like, this is really bad. Like, how do people love this? It's gone to Broadway. That is so weird. And then I was like, this can't be it. It's so bad. It turns out it was like a performance at Disneyland for children. Anyway, that reminded me of Bohemian Rhapsody.
Okay,
where we're like,
Bohemian Rhapsody
movie?
Was a Disneyland live attraction, like,
that's
theme park
a perfect
version
analogy.
Of a movie.
It's like, it gets the people in, just gives you a bit of feel-good here, a bit of one-liner here.
It was so
but no
bad.
Substance.
Speaking of show, don't tell. Tell, don't show.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, they would, like, there's that one moment where the dad's like, well, when I sent you away to try and make you turn into a real man, it's like, what?
Yeah,
like,
and then moments later, like, he gets the news that he's, like, gotten on the radio or some record company wants them, and it's like, okay, this is, like, a little on the nose.
It was so bad. And, like, it's crazy to me that so many people like it. It made so much money, and I was just like, I'm like, what the
I think there's the Queen effect in there, because, like, Queen and
Beloved.
Freddie Mercury are
just
so iconic. And it is nice to see it represented. And it is an interesting story. The music is amazing because it's literally Freddie Mercury and Queen. So there's those levels to it that can be enjoyable.
Okay, but then, on top of all of this, it's directed by Bryan Singer, who left like 3 weeks before it ended, mostly directed by Bryan Singer. So then I just started like reading all the articles about his allegations. He's a literal rapist. And like, it's like, okay, there's not only is this movie just like bad when you watch it, it's boring and it's a slog and it's like poorly done. And it's like also like directed by a literally like evil person who, and it's just, anyways, I just can't believe
it. Yeah, I would say unless you're obsessed with Queen, skip it. I really love Queen, but I still was just like, that's why I would way rather just turn on YouTube
and
watch.
One point they like show up somewhere at a building and I'm like, huh, that's weird. What building is this? And the guy gets out and goes, a recording studio?
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, yeah, that's telling, not showing. It's like, okay, why are you?
And just something about it kept jumping around, and like apparently the story of how he joined Queen is just fully fabricated.
And his mouthpiece, I'm sorry, that's the whole time I'm like, you're, what's his name, Rami Malek?
Yeah.
With a mouthpiece. Like, I'm not believing that you're Freddie Mercury because the whole time you're trying to push it back
it's
in your mouth.
So it was over the top. And yeah, usually when someone does that to their body or face, it's supposed to be so part of them that you don't even notice it.
You
it just
have
becomes
millions
a character.
Of dollars.
But all I could think about the whole time was like, this is Rami Malek dressed up in like a crazy over the top mouthpiece. It didn't work.
And they just said, like, they just were like, oh, gay people just stare at each other with eyes. Like, it's like they'd be like,
yeah, there was just, no there was context or subtleness to the gay interaction. And I did look it up after, and it is true that he loved his, like, wife that he, I don't know if they were married,
well,
sorry,
right.
But like Mary Austin, I think her name was,
yeah.
Like, he always considered her his best friend. There was a moment during the film where I was like, why are they focusing on his love with this female? But he did always
feel
attached to her.
But it was so straight-washed, even though it was directed by a gay rapist.
Yeah.
Okay,
anyway,
wow.
I would give it a 1 out of 10.
Yeah,
honestly.
I mean, I didn't finish it, so I don't know if I can, like, fairly assess
That's
it.
True.
But I don't usually not finish movies. I was
Me
like,
either.
This is the
I can't
worst.
Remember the last movie I didn't finish. What do you want to do next? Black Klansman could be one.
L.A. That's a weird movie.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings about this. I was really into it. Like, I loved watching it. And I feel like the premise and the setup was great, but the final execution, I think, fell apart.
They created such cool tension. It was such an interesting plot. Like, Spike Lee has a cool way of filming that I actually was like, okay, this is, like, different and interesting. And I actually started to think this is awesome that this has been propped up and lots of people are seeing this movie. But the tension was created, and then it just sort of, like,
it's like they didn't
like
take advantage of all this. Like, there's literally, like, terrifying moments where you're, like, scared they're going to get caught, scared they're going to be, like,
life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Like, found out on screen, people being like, wait, is that not the cop that busted me once? That he's a spy. And then nothing happens to it. So you feel tension, but then there's no actual release. It just, like, fizzles and goes away.
The one thing, though, that's really interesting is in the last 5 minutes, it becomes a movie that's actually, like, literally being like, Donald Trump is a white supremacist.
Yeah.
And I think that is true. And so therefore, I think that in that context, I'm like, okay, this
movie
was... At
the end, you're like, whoa,
yeah,
this was built for this part.
Which I think is, like, obviously, if you're going to have the platform to make movies, it's, like, really cool if you have a strong political stance. But up until that point, as a movie, I was like, there's, again, the same thing with Bohemian Rhapsody. I'm like, are we watching the right version? Like, mm-hmm. are parts edited out? Because, like, it's literally confusing. And when I think about directors of movies and editing, it's like, okay, whoever directed both of these movies, I don't think it can be their masterpiece, unlike mm-hmm. Roma, because I'm like, there's actually moments where I'm like, that actually just doesn't really make sense. The whole plot about them being two people and using the phone, it's like, wait, you would just be like,
so basically in the film, like, they're pretending to be someone who's interested to be a Klansman, but because the main protagonist is black, they need another white guy to actually go to the events and pretend to be him. But it's like, they're so worried about their voices being
like,
different.
Why wouldn't he just pick up the phone and
it's
tell,
like,
the other
then
guy?
The white guy should just be the one on the phone as
yeah.
well. It's very strange that, and then that creates tension because, like, they're going to get caught, but then you're like, why?
Someone
are
would
they
have had a meeting like,
so complicated.
Buddy, I think I have a simple solution to this.
Yeah.
Like, why don't you just,
like,
direct
you can still be
this.
Part of the investigation.
Yeah.
Just, like, why doesn't the same person play
pick
the
up
character?
The phone. Yeah.
It's
but
very
I mean,
weird.
It was really fun to watch, like, white supremacists literally
yeah.
get, like, killed.
It was a good
and, like,
yeah.
like just, like,
it was satisfying in that sense.
Yeah.
yeah.
Like, it, and I really liked that it actually had a point.
And it was
that
unique.
It, stuck
it was
to.
A cool storyline.
Yeah.
I was into it, but felt that.
Like, better than A Star is Born and better than Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, yeah. I think so, for sure.
Okay, now another, in my
this
opinion,
is our final one, right? Because we haven't watched
The Favorite.
The
was so good.
So I also just watched The Favorite. You watched it a
and
while
you didn't
ago.
Like The Lobster, this director's other movie, which I loved.
Correct.
So you were
I
nervous.
I thought it
in.
Was a cool concept, The Lobster, but once they killed a dog in it, and any movie that kills a dog on screen is banished
okay.
for me.
Fair enough.
That's unacceptable. It's just like A Star is Born. They used a dog inappropriately. In that movie, they fucking killed one. Anyway, this movie was actually so good.
The favorite.
Like, the
was so
favorite.
Good. It's hilarious.
It's so well executed. The costumes, the set, the acting, the every level of
the
it.
The concept.
Yeah. Like,
and it's the true story. Like, I embellished
which blew
a bit,
my mind. I only knew that because you had told me going
I
into
was like,
it.
There's no way this is true. Then I Wikipedia'd after and I was like, genius. Like to make this so thrilling and hilarious. And I loved that movie.
I think it was really unique. Yeah, just something about it really stood out to me. It was enjoyable. It was
the
funny. It was serious.
Incredible.
It was scary.
Queer.
Yeah, like, I don't know what else to say about this movie other than, like,
go
I think
see it. Form your own opinion.
Favorite and Roma to me are, like, those movies that are, like, there's, it just stands out as such a unique film that was so well executed, and I don't really have, I'm sure if I watched many times, I might have minor criticisms here and there, but overall, like, really enjoyable.
And, now let's just get into the movie and say, okay, like, Green Book literally, like, I do not want to see this movie. I heard it's so
trash. No, I can't say
problematic
it
and weird and just whatever. And Vice, even, it's like The Big Short, like the director of The Big Short. And we probably should have watched them for the whole scope of things. But when you've read enough about them and hear that they're bad, like, I even forced myself to watch Bohemian Rhapsody and I'm like, damn it, why did I waste my hour and a half? That, whatever, you can say what you want about those movies, but I've.
That one's especially weird, though, because the audience versus critic reaction has been, like, the audience has loved it, but critics hated it.
Because people love Queen. Are you talking about Bohemian Rhapsody?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. But that was what threw me off, because there was good ratings about it, but anyway.
Okay, so there's only two more things I want to say.
Okay.
So the one thing I want to say is this idea about how everyone just needs to realize that these movies, they are all so queer. And not one queer person played a queer. It's like, it is insane to me that it's 2019. Why can we not do this? Okay, Mahershala Ali in Green Book is a queer person. Okay, so he's straight. Okay. The Favorite, all three of them are essentially queer. Mm-hmm. All three straight. Okay, Bohemian Rhapsody, queer. Played by. It's just like, it's actually kind of at this point, I'm just like, okay, this is ridiculous.
Like, why can't a single queer actor be hired?
I know, and it's just, I don't know, it really bothers me, but then on top of that, I just want to talk about one other thing, which is a movie called Can You Ever Forgive Me, which wasn't nominated for Best Picture or for Best Director, but in my opinion, was incredible, and it's the one with Melissa McCarthy and her friend, and she's nominated, so it's like in the Oscar world right now, so this movie's so good, it's so simple, also queer, again, Melissa McCarthy, not queer, plays a lesbian, here we go again, but the director of this movie, it's such a simple, beautiful, hilarious, good movie, is a woman, and she is left out of the Best Director category this year. And to think that some of these other people are in these Best Director, like,
having watched these films.
Yeah, even like Spike Lee, I'm like, this isn't his like masterpiece.
Greg brings up a really interesting point. Black Klansman in the eyes of many critics is not Spike Lee's masterpiece. Do the Right Thing, however, absolutely is. It's one of the only movies ever to be selected by the United States Library of Congress for preservation in the National Film Registry during its first year of eligibility, and is arguably one of the most powerful American films about race.
Doctor?
Come on, what?
Always do the right thing.
But in 1989, it did not receive a Best Picture nomination. Spike Lee was snubbed. The Academy has done this before. In 1974, both Al Pacino and Jack Nicholson were up for Best Actor. Al Pacino in The Godfather 2.
I knew it was you, Fredo. You broke my heart.
And Jack Nicholson for Chinatown.
But Mrs. Mulray, I goddamn near lost my nose, and I like it. I like breathing through it. And I still think that you're hiding something.
Two incredible performances, but they both lost to Art Carney for his role in Harry and Tonto, a story of a man on a road trip with his cat.
So he's packing up his faithful sidekick Tonto and running away from home.
Art Carney was considered due to win. To make up for this blunder, Jack Nicholson was awarded Best Actor the following year, and Al Pacino would win in 1992 for his slapstick portrayal of a blind retired war veteran in Scent of a Woman.
Would you like to learn to tango, Donna?
Definitely not his best work, but he was nominated and lost 7 times prior, so in the eyes of the Academy, he was due to catch a break.
You broke my streak.
This is why many conclude that the awards are more often a reflection of lifetime achievement than a reflection of current work.
Or whatever. Like, I'm just like, this is weird. There's this other movie, like, that just randomly gets a Best Director nod that's, like, not even in Best Picture. I'm like, why? Hollywood is so messed up. I'm like, this is, in my opinion, of all the movies that I saw other than Roma and The Favorite,
like,
the Best Directed movie. Because it's like, oh, this script is simple, but it's because of the way that it was made and executed that it's so good. And, yeah, now it's just all men who are in the Best Director category. So
that is frustrating. I want to say for the end of this segment, it's been longer than normal, but let's do one final thing. Who do you want to win? Who do you think will win?
I want Roma to win. And, like, in some, like, sad, twisted way, I think, like, because of the world, like, Green Book's going to win or something.
I guess it's hard because we haven't seen those. Do you think so?
Well, because when I think about the Oscars, I know I'm defending in the debate that they should still exist. But when you think about the Oscars, it's all political and it's all, like, they have so many industry insiders. But actually, you know what? I'm going to say Roma.
Who you think of the winners?
I'm going to say I think Roma's going to win.
Yeah. I think so, too. But that'll be interesting. Do you think because it was on Netflix, it might get some docked marks from people?
Oh, true. That's like what that I mean. There's so many the other industry. Things behind. But I'm going to say Roma across the board.
Okay. This is so hard. Yeah, for me, it's between The Favorite and Roma, and I could go either way. And I just saw The Favorite, so I feel like it's fresh in my mind. Like, I kind of want The Favorite to win, but I also love Roma so much. I can't choose. And I just have this feeling.
Say which one you want and which one you think. That's what you have to say.
Okay, I want Roma to win.
Okay.
No. Bohemian Rhapsody can't. There's part of me that thinks it's going to win. No,
it
can't.
I will flip my TV over. Well, actually,
I think... Yeah. Okay, I'm going to pick the same as you. I think Roma's going to win.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. Well, that'll be a nice night for cinema. Wow, that was a lot. I hope people are, like, listening to this.
Hello?
Are you guys listening?
Are you guys still here?
We're yelling. I know we're yelling, but are you listening to this?
Okay, we're going to go away, but we will come back and have a true debate on whether or not the Oscars should even exist at all.
Thank you all so much for listening to Side Note. We are so happy that our voices get to go into your ears every week. And make sure that you follow our new Instagram at Side Note Pod for behind the scenes footage and leave us a review on the Apple Podcast app. We love to read them and see what you're saying. Now, let's get back into the final debate. So today's debate is about whether or not the Oscars should exist at all. Oh my gosh. So I, Greg, am a huge fan of the Oscars, and I will be debating that, yes, the Oscars are extremely important and should continue.
Okay. And I believe that the Oscars are worth crap all.
Whoa.
And that they should be completely and utterly canceled, and I have the stats and proof to explain
why. Canceled culture. Okay, here we go. Mitch, you're going to go first.
Okay.
Just because you are. Okay?
Okay.
Don't question me.
Okay.
One, two, you know what to do, and go.
Debate time.
Okay, so first of all, they're so boring, and people don't even watch them. The 2018 Oscars was the lowest rated Oscars of all time, and I think you may have mentioned this earlier, but they literally have no impact on box office success. There's been a handful of studies that have looked into it, and sometimes it seems they do, but overall, there's no consensus over whether they help films at all. There's extreme bias in them, so it's made up of people who are on average 49 years old. So that means average is a lot of old people. 93% white people and 76% men who are, like, rating the films and giving their nominations and stuff. And when people of color do win, it's often based on racial stereotypes. And if you speak out, like, sometimes people are like, oh, the Oscars is a great chance for actors to be activists and whatever. It's like, no, there's been actors who have been banned. So Richard Gere was banned for 20 years for calling out China's treatment of Tibet. So it's only on the Oscars terms when they think it's important. And also, let's not forget the hashtag MeToo movement. It's like people part of that entire industry were okay dealing with that stuff as long as it didn't hurt their careers and they could suck up to the people that mattered most and they weren't willing to expose. So much for being activists. It's also rigged in favor of movies that are, like, pretty boring. Like, I know La La Land didn't win eventually. Is that what it's called? L.A. Land?
L.A. Land. Okay.
But basically, it's like a weird voting system where, like, if a movie is controversial, it's more likely to do worse. And also, so many awards are given based on merit. So people aren't necessarily, like, like, I know you don't love Lord of the Rings, but, like, the third one won, and it definitely was not the best one, but they thought, like, wow, this series was so impactful, we should give it. And a lot of actors and actresses win just because it's, like, they're due for an Oscar. Stupid. Fake. Also, some campaigns literally spent millions of dollars. So Shakespeare in Love spent $16 million to outbeat Saving Private Ryan by including paying people to say bad things about Saving Private Ryan.
Wow.
So I'm going to end there because I have more to say, but the Oscars should be canceled. Good night.
Okay, you brought up some really interesting, controversial subjects that make me think the Oscars are, ooh, really interesting.
What?
Like, okay. I mean, that's all, like, I found that stuff all really interesting, and I'm, like, excited for this year.
Okay, that's not what that was supposed to do, but are you ready to bring on your pro-Oscar points?
Yes. Okay.
All right, you can start anytime.
Okay, so you're right. The Oscar viewership has decreased a lot, but I would argue that a lot of people are, like us, going on Reddit, finding the best live stream. That's not going into the Nielsen reports. That's how we watch any live event now as millennials. Also, it's aired in 225 countries across the world. So yeah, the viewership might have gone down in America, but it's pretty insane to think about the actual impact that these award shows have on the world. People around the world tune in to watch Hollywood, and I think that that's really important because yes, you are in fact right that the voting panel is extremely old, extremely white, and extremely male, and extremely hetero. But in the last few years, they've panicked about that, the Academy, that is, and they've added 1,600 of around 8,000 people to into it who are younger, more diverse when it comes to race and sexuality because they want to change this.
Okay.
And I think that this is an important thing because, as I said, 225 countries are watching this and they're seeing movies like Moonlight, which, you know, it's a queer movie about people of color and, like, it's just fast.
1 minute.
Wow. I always feel like I just, okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's fast, like Roma, The Favorite. Like, Can You Ever Forgive Me? Call Me By Your Name. I'm just focusing on a lot of, like, queer movies. But the fact that the world tunes in to see these movies get highlighted, I think, is extremely important. And it shows where we are as a society when it comes to movies. And I think that's my next point, is that looking back on the Oscars, they become, like, a time capsule for culture. Like, I mean, obviously, like, Western culture. But it's still really interesting to at least look at them critically throughout the years. Like, what did people care about at the time?
And 30 seconds.
I do think that these – it is a chance for people to get up in front of – an audience of many people and say whatever they want. And you're right about Susan Sarandon and Tim Robbins. They were talking about the 266 Haitian people who were in Guantanamo Bay for being HIV positive. They're saying, you know, why are they being held? Being HIV positive is not a crime. And they got that out there to say something like that a long time ago, and that was a big deal. Sure, the Oscars got mad, but they still got to say it. And that still happens.
And time.
Wow. Okay. Okay, here we go.
Okay, so let's open up the conversation. If you had other points you want to talk about, like, we can talk about them openly. So your main argument is just that the Oscars are a place for what? Like, activism? Is that what you think?
Well, I think that they are. I think that...
Because what? Lots of people are watching.
Okay, from around the world are watching this award show, okay? People get to go up and say whatever they want when they win their Oscar, and people get to listen to them, and I think it's so boring when people don't say, and when they're actually, like, thanking their friends and family. I'm always like...
Yeah, I'm like, you need to cut this out.
Yeah, your manager
Oscar.
Knows, like, that you, like, love
the
them.
Oscars, like... That's what makes the Oscars boring to me. It's like, I understand appreciating people, but, like, being on stage saying people's names doesn't really mean anything to viewers. I love when there's, like, an impassioned speech about things.
And that's what I think really is their benefit. When you think about a lot of these movies being forward-thinking, being challenging, and then people going up and talking and, like, using it as a platform, I think celebrities, like, whatever. We live in a society where they have so much power. They have such I'm going to say speakerphone. What's the word? When you go...
Megaphone? They have such speakerphone.
Like at a rally when you yell into the megaphone. They have a megaphone, and it's a really cool place for them to actually say things. They've done it throughout the
years. But they have a megaphone their entire lives. Why do they only use it at the Oscars?
Because, like, so many people are watching that. It's a live event that everyone is tuning in for, and when people take the opportunity to use it to say something important, I think that's why the Oscars are cool and should continue. And the fact that they're diversifying their academy, I think in the future we're going to see more films
that
challenge
people.
Does
that really have to
people.
Do with the Oscars? Like, people taking advantage of the Oscars to tout, like, activist messages? Like, the Oscars doesn't encourage that. They don't say, use our platform to have a social message and do good in this world. Like, they literally, in fact, probably don't want that because it's, like, out of their control. So you're saying you like the Oscars because the people who are giving speeches can hijack it for reasons that it's literally not designed for.
Yes.
Okay.
In short,
just wanted to make sure.
Okay. Yes, I do think that. And I do think that, like, the movies, especially that we've seen as of late, minus Vice, Green Book, Bohemian Rhapsody. Well, even Bohemian Rhapsody is, like, a queer, it's a poorly told queer story. Wow, I need to, like, figure out my opinion. But, I mean, a lot of these movies are challenging. They are representing what people are thinking about right now in the zeitgeist. I know it's problematic, but the world is problematic. Hollywood is problematic. And sometimes when we look at the Oscars is when we get to go, oh, wow, it's still all male directors. Like, this needs to change. It's highlighting the institution and the way that it works, and the Oscars is a time that we all focus in on it. Without the Oscars, there'd maybe be less challenging of this industry.
I don't know. I don't think that's fully untrue, but if you think about, like, this industry and the Oscars has existed for how long? Like,
oh, since 19... 19-
like, what,
like,
Oscars
a long time.
Like,
sometimes when they flash back,
75
like, wow.
years or something like that. Like, it's been there in front of everyone's faces forever. The only reason it's being called out now is because, like, in our contemporary world, we're acknowledging these problems. And so the fact that the Oscars shows us these inequalities, it's like, is a moot point because it always has and no one said anything about it until the last, like, 5 years, maybe.
What do you mean? Wait, clarify that.
Well, you're just saying, like, it's so great because we can see that it's all male directors, and now that's why we're calling this out. It's like, no, it's not. It's always been all male directors. Every year for the last 75 years, we've seen that there's been massive inequalities in the people who win these things and who get acknowledged for these things.
It hasn't changed.
I'm saying it hasn't changed. We're only, as a society, we've changed, and this is like an old beast of society that we're going, okay, that's really problematic. Like, the fact that it's being aired isn't what's making the change. It's what people are saying is the problem.
Okay,
it's the problem, not.
I have a
quote I wanted to bring up.
Okay.
By a famous scientist, Richard Feynman, and he had a very strong feelings on, you know, like, honors and epaulettes, like awards that people.
It is kind of weird that we watch these awards of all of them.
So I'm gonna read his quote because I like it. Okay. So he says, I don't like
honors. I read that as I don't like boners. But what does it say?
Honors.
Okay.
I don't like honors. I'm appreciated for the work that I did and for the people who appreciate it. And I noticed that other physicists use my work. I don't need anything else. I don't think there's any sense to anything else. I don't see that it makes any point that someone in the Swedish Academy decides that this work is noble enough to receive a prize.
Wow, Drake Sweden.
I've already got the prize. The prize is the pleasure of finding the thing out. The kick in the discovery, the observation that other people use it. Those are the real things. The honors are unreal to me. I don't believe in honors. It bothers me. Honors. Honors is epaulettes. Epaulettes is uniforms. So I feel like that's a specific look into, like, the Nobel Prize
space.
That's
interesting.
But
yeah.
I think it speaks to the honor and reward of creating a film, of acting in a film, of producing music. Like, that should be your reward. And I understand, like, it feels great to be acknowledged for your work. And I don't know that I can fully feel this way that Richard Feynman does. But there is a point, especially with science, it's like you shouldn't only be looking for discoveries to be rewarded.
Clearly Richard Feynman went to therapy. He was an evolved person, it seems like.
Right,
he
but
was
yeah,
able
you,
to get
the
that.
Craft is what brings you the reward. And if you're only doing it for the fame and the acknowledgement, isn't that what perpetuates a part of society that is also pretty toxic in the first place?
The quote from Richard Feynman had us thinking about how the Nobel Prize has quite a few similarities to the Oscars, including that it's a system that can be gamed, manipulated, and may not always be grounded in merit. We came across an article, 10 Simple Rules to Win a Nobel Prize, on ways to enhance your odds, and here are a few of our favorites. First up, pick your family carefully. 7 children of Nobel Prize winners have gone on to win the prize themselves, and 4 married couples have jointly won the prize. That includes Marie Curie and her husband Pierre, who won in physics in 1903, while their daughter Arin and her husband Frederic won the chemistry prize in 1935. Wow, what a smart family! If you don't have a Nobel Prize winning mom and dad, maybe you could work in a lab of a previous prize winner. Working in a prestigious lab could give you a boost. For example, the Medical Research Council Laboratory in Cambridge, UK has pumped out 9 winners. Or you could study biology. There are 3 STEM categories you can win an award in. The first is physiology or medicine, which is all one category. The second is chemistry, and the third is physics. With these categories in mind, biologists actually have a leg up. The physiology medicine category has been won continually by biologists, but about half of all chemistry winners are actually biologists as well. If biology isn't your thing, collaborate, but only in groups of three. Collaborating on a project can bring diverse ideas and unique skill sets to a project, but only three people can go on a winning ticket. This often leads to researchers being excluded, like in the scientists who worked on the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory project, which detected cosmic gravitational waves.
Say that three times fast.
The actual number of contributing scientists on that project was literally three pages long, but only three got the prize. It also doesn't hurt to always be nice to Swedish scientists. According to the author, several laureates had their prize severely delayed by picking a fight with the wrong person, aka the wrong Swedish Nobel Committee member. All this aside, of course, being a good scientist matters. Ask good questions, find new methods to investigate them, and look for unexpected results and stay curious.
Yeah, but I would say that I do think it's interesting that he says that, especially about science. I think it would be so interesting if science had an award show where the public got to actually see these amazing discoveries, because science is something that I think needs to be more in the public consciousness at all times. But unfortunately, or fortunately, we look at the arts and pop culture as something that more people are interested in. And yeah, you could say that for the actual person winning the award, like Brad Pitt or whatever, that maybe he shouldn't care about the award show. But I'm talking about the impact that it has on society. And
okay,
I think
I can agree with that.
For example, the Swedish Academy and like the Nobel Prize, if people watch that in like the way that they watch the Oscars,
right,
I would be arguing that that's a great thing, because people are absorbing this really important information about science and like the evolution of human mind and like the world around us. But they aren't. Well, some people really care about it, but the Oscars, people care about it. And so what I like about it is that it takes in many ways, not when we think of Vice Green Dog and Bohemian Rhapsody, but it takes these movies that I think can be really important for people to see, that are about queer stories, stories from different perspectives that are...
I guess that's my only argument that I'd say, is that it often doesn't. Like, yes, there are times in recent history, some movies that have won tell stories that are very different than the ones that would have won through the last however many decades. But I think it's more like, to me, that the Oscars follows the trend of what they need to be doing, and they lag behind, and they're not helping to define and expose people. They're saying, oh, geez, for whatever reason, this movie is a cultural phenomenon, and if we don't acknowledge it, we'll be seen as bad people.
Yeah, you're right. I think that they are definitely like not moving
as
fast
as they could. It would
be
amazing if they were. Like often when I watch the Oscar movies, like, the ones that I think are the best and most impactful aren't the ones that are winning necessarily. Like, there's so many.
I hope Roma wins.
Great example. There's so many foreign films that I end up watching that I'm like,
it's bad.
And then there's just the one little category for foreign films.
Yeah,
and it's like,
true.
But that's the rest of the world. And I get that it's an American.
But Hollywood and they're trying to balance between like art house films and then the films that actually like the general
public. But it doesn't feel
loves.
Like a balance to me. It's all Hollywood.
I think they're doing an okay balance. And I think to say this, and how I'll end is I'm saying I think they shouldn't go away, because I think there's a lot of hope for them as they diversify the actual Academy to become an award show that in the future props up movies that are challenging, props up movies that can go down in history as really helping to like define and progress the arts and the way that people look at the world. And I hope that that is the case. And I can see a glimmer of that happening in the last few years of the Oscars. But I know that they can be problematic. But that's just what the stance that I'm taking.
And like, because also think about like what we haven't really touched on, I tried to in one of my points, was like the amount of money and campaigning that goes into winning is irrespective of how good the movie is.
In September, they talk about
that Shakespeare in Love spent $16
million
to promote a film. Like, some movies don't even have that budget to make the film. That could still be amazing movies.
I know. Okay, so that's a really good point. I do think that's insane. And I've read a few really intense articles about the actual pathway to winning an Oscar, and it's wild. You have to go to all these luncheons.
How much press
it's literally have, yeah. It's like a political campaign. The money, the power, the energy. I do not think that that's interesting. I do not think that that should be the case.
And it certainly and doesn't lead to the best flaw. Film winning.
No, it does
almost,
not.
In fact, it does the opposite.
No, but I
because
like
the films that have the bigger budgets are more likely
yes,
to win.
I think that's a very good point, and I just think and hope that in the future that can be like curbed a little bit by the fact that the Academy, these 8,000 people, get to choose from hopefully some progressive movies and have that shine through. But you're right, there's a lot of money that's spent behind them, and it's actually embarrassing. But I do think the Oscars should continue, and I will be watching as someone who's loved them my whole life. But I can see why.
I will be watching. I mean, I'll probably hear about it. I don't mind. I don't, like, absolutely hate it, but I'm just like, all award shows to me are a little bit
It's funny.
Silly.
Whenever I've watched the Oscars with you, you're always like, this is so stupid.
Yeah, and I'm like, you convince me every year. You're like, no, it's so fun.
It's going to be fun.
Wait, I'm literally just listening to people say names of people I don't know. I haven't seen most of these things.
But every once in a while, it's worth it.
Okay, but it's like, now YouTube exists. It's like, the next day, I'm going to see all the best clips. But yet, somehow, I'm still tricked into watching the award show for 4 hours.
Well, okay. So, people out there, young audience who's probably like, what's the Oscars? Like, let us know. If you'll be watching the Oscars, let us know what you think about this year's Oscar movies.
Yeah, who do you think he's gonna win?
Do you think the Oscars should be
let us know, though.
What?
What'd you say? Prop up our podcast by talking about the Oscars, yeah. Even though I hate them.
Well, no, let us know if you think they should continue, because yeah, I think this could be an interesting debate. Even looking it up online, so many people talk about this, because it is such an interesting, like, you know, potentially problematic award show. Mm-hmm. So make sure you follow us on @SideNotePod or @MitchellMoffett @WellWatchMePLZ. And I think the Oscars will be around for a long time, whether we like it or not.
We'll see. I'm curious. But yeah, let us know your thoughts, and we'll see you guys in the next week.
Bye.
Bye.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.